extent has taken place. And so far as our struggle for civil rights is concerned, I'm not worried about that now. The struggle for civil rights in America is won. What I am more concerned about is the fact that the Negro shall not be content simply with demanding an equal share in the existing system. It seems to me that his fundamental responsibility and his historical challenge is to use his weight, since he has less to lose in the present system than anybody else or any other group, to make sure that the system which shall survive in the United States of America, I don't care what system you call it, shall be a system which guarantees justice and freedom for everyone. The way I usually put it is, sure, we're being invited now in to take a front seat. But there's no particular honor in being invited to take a front seat at one's own funeral.
Death to skinny jeans. Death to skinny jeans. The Watchman is back from Hugging Trees, July 15th, 2009. I'm going to explain to you why the hottest soap opera in the world is coming out of Africa. Lamar Odom, might he be going to Cleveland or Dallas? I got 10 new hourly intros. I got my Kenya hat on today. East Africans are a little upset Obama went to Ghana first. Come on. Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee, July 15th, 2009. Mwah. Yes, I missed you all too. I'm back in the building. I have no idea how my voice sounds, but you all will assess that for me as only you can. A little raspy, right? This happens sometimes when I've had relatively quiet mornings. BlackElectorate.com, BlackCoffeeChannel.com, CedricMuhammad.com. And this is a worldwide program. Kingston, Jamaica. Tuned in. It's 11:06. From what I understand, I was late today. I have a new clock. Some of you may be able to confirm that. I may have been slow on the draw today, a little late. Kingston, Jamaica. It's 11:06 a.m. Johannesburg, South Africa, 6:06 p.m. Peace to you. Lagos, Nigeria, 5:06 p.m. Oh, London, England, 5:06 p.m. as well. Mekomenadidant, Toronto, 12:06 p.m. In Nairobi, Kenya. I'm rocking your hat today. I love you, even if President Obama overlooked you. 7:06 p.m. And then the home base launching pad, Washington, D.C., 12:06 p.m. Eastern. West Coast folk waking up. Let me go through the captain's log today. I have the footage, the clip, the audio of Tiger Woods responding to Jim Brown. Yep. I know you've been waiting on that. I didn't miss that. I'll be bringing that to you raw. Do God and science mix? Question that makes a lot of folk nervous. I hesitate to bring up religion and theology because people are confused on what the difference is between religion and theology. So if I say something spiritual, etc., reference scripture, people have concepts that have nothing to do with what I have in mind. I'll work with that a little bit today. As I said, a lot of upset East Africans regarding President Obama's trip to Ghana, West Africa. I'll give you some of the anecdotes that I'm hearing from my family on the east side of the continent. Are the Lakers in danger of losing Lamar Odom? Now, over my break, the Celtics, the Lakers, Cleveland, a lot of teams got busy. And I was sitting back trying to think, well, who's better now? Is it the Lakers with Lamar Odom, Ron Artest, Kobe, Paul Gasol on one side along with Andrew Bynum, or the new look Celtics, assuming Rasheed Wallace is in the building, healthy Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen, along with Rajon Rondo or Rajon Rondo, or whoever may be the point guard. But if Lamar Odom does not come back and maybe goes to Dallas, the complexion changes a little bit. I have a new favorite show today. Yes, Tiny and Toya on BET. The Bet Against Us channel has found a winner finally. I will be tuning in every, what is it, Tuesday night? I watched the first two episodes of Tiny and Toya. If you saw either episode, let me know. I'm going to break it down. Has Kent King, the beloved star, in my view, of General Hospital, has she been replaced by a actress coming from the continent? General Hospital versus Jacob's Cross at some point during this broadcast. I may have to speak to Kent. I have a point of view on this whole matter of the black children being discriminated against at the private swim club. Some of you may not like it. Of course, I could care less. I have a new nominee for Gangster of the Week. I don't think anyone will be able to top it. Unfortunately, I don't know this gentleman's name. I will need you all in Black Coffee Nation to help me identify my nominee for Gangster of the Week. And yes, the story that we all missed, caught up in the coverage of Michael Jackson, a direct link between slavery and the Rothschild family. Why isn't this a bigger topic on Black Talk Radio? The same Black Talk Radio that is crying for a bailout. I'm going to break down this whole discussion of a bailout for minority, quote unquote, minority broadcasters. Do they deserve it? Do they deserve it if they will not talk on such topics as the direct link between the Rothschild family and slavery? What good is a minority broadcaster if they will not take on subjects that others won't? Black Wall Street in Newark, another subject I want to get into. A great coverage from a couple individuals that I've been friendly with, went to school with. Can there be a renaissance in cities like Newark, New Jersey? Touch on that. Victor Ortiz, my brother, my favorite boxer, Victor Ortiz, Now you say, well, Cedric, how could Victor Ortiz be your favorite boxer when he got knocked out? I have the footage to explain why. And that the Michael Jackson tributes are not done until I do what I have to do today. So we'll get into Michael Jackson. With your permission, I want to take my time with that today. And then lastly, on the captain's log, the Pope's encyclical letter. Pope wrote an encyclical on economics, finance, and business. I'd like to crack that open a little bit as well today. Now, let's get right down to it. Hold on. Put the camera on me. Get the camera on me. Hold on. See if I can center myself. If you're not looking at the screen, come over now. You got 2 seconds before it goes down. Okay, 1, 2, 3. What can I do with this, you all? A skinny jean, like I'm holding up a pant leg. Let me zoom in on it for you. What can I do with this skinny leg? If you are wearing skinny jeans these days, tight jeans, and you're a male, let me know. This is what I'm expected to fit into these days. Death to the skinny jean movement today. Get right to it. Some of you all, you go to my Facebook page, friends, and for the show, little back and forth on the skinny jean movement and how this came about. And this is instructive. I don't want anybody telling me this is not geopolitical, because how fashions come and go without your permission is a subject of great intrigue to me. How does this happen? How do we suddenly go from button-ups to tight shirts, baggy jeans, to skinny legs? Let me grab this pant leg again. Look at how skinny that leg is. I'm supposed to fit in that. Now, I am a welterweight, not the biggest dude, but I can leg press 720 pounds. Oh, yeah, the steroid HGH regulars at the gym salute, stand at attention when I get on the machine. I can leg press 720 pounds. I am supposed to fit into these tight, skinny jeans. I want to know how you feel. Women are less, find this to be less problematic. Let's just be clear. Skinny jeans and the momentum of the skinny jean movement is not going to find resistance from a critical mass of women. So we, those of us who've been rocking baggy jeans, comfortable with room in the pant leg, this is our time. Rise up. DTSJM, Death to the Skinny Jeans Movement. I want to make this real for you all. If you've been shopping, you've encountered it. You may not have been prepared for it, or you may not even understand what's going on. You've been feeling less comfortable in your jeans when you drive. You don't understand why you don't feel right. A Mickey was slipped in on you when you wasn't looking. Yeah, look at those legs. Look at the pant legs right there. They give you room at the kneecap. But if you got a small thigh, this is not the look for you. Now, again, I'm a welterweight, but I can leg press 720 pounds several times. We'll get footage of that one day. But this is what I have to. This is what we have to deal with. Rise up. DTSJM, Death to the Skinny Jeans Movement today. July 15th, 2009, I inaugurated. Now, any of the males listening to the show, if you are a supporter of skinny jeans, tight jeans, small pant legs. The forum and the floor are open to you. But I was on the Metro in DC, Green and Red Line, and I noticed it was a generational thing. The young kings coming up, the young brothers in Washington, D.C. You can see them all over the streets, neighborhoods, metro. They have fully embraced the skinny pant leg. I don't know if this is due to the influence of Lil Wayne, but let me make an important distinction. There's a distinction to make between the jeans that are scrunt, like pulled down with your boxer shorts showing, made skinny that way. Because you can make a skinny jean by pulling the pants down, you know, beneath your boxers. You all have seen this, sagging brothers with the tight. But this is the thing. It's not baggy. It's a tight pull down of the jeans. The belt stays. Lil Wayne has perfected this. Let's give credit where credit is due. Congratulate Lil Wayne. So it's a generational thing. So I don't know, you know, perhaps it's I'm feeling officially old. But I think this is the last stand for me. Rise up. DTS JM today on the hottest show in the diaspora, Death to Skinny Jeans. If you are a female and you support skinny jeans, no problem. Point of view is welcome. Let me give you a different shot of the skinny jeans. This is what you're seeing. This is what you have to deal with. Jigga is one of our leaders. I've said this before, the great Jay-Z, representing for those of us that wanted to sag and bag a little bit. Let me tell you how bad this thing has gotten. Wall Street Journal, while on vacation, July 6, 2009. Tight squeeze, making room for a new men's fashion. Levi's and Gap accommodate the trend. Spandex adds a little stretch. Ray A. Smith writes, Doug Black has found himself in a tight squeeze more times than he cares to remember. One day he got caught in the rain without an umbrella and was unable to run. When his colleagues sat in a circle, the 23-year-old English teacher from Portland, Oregon, couldn't cross his legs. And when he tried to jaywalk while in Beijing for work, he couldn't hop the median divider with his friends. Skinny jeans are dangerous, y'all. I had to walk half a mile down the street on my own to use the crosswalk, he says. What was the problem? His jeans were too tight. But he has no plans to buy a looser style. Discomfort comes with the territory, he says. Skinny jeans with tapered legs and narrow peg ankles seemed like a flash in the pan when they appeared in the stores a few years ago. And let me acknowledge, when I first saw the emergence of this horrendous phenomenon, it was about 2004. Anyone, you know, you could say BC, say BSG, before skinny jeans, and ASJ, after skinny jeans. BSJ, ASJ. Right around 2004 is when I saw the return of the tightening of the jeans for men. They seem more suited to women. Today, though, sales of men's skinny jeans are going strong, and mass brands Gap and Levi's are getting in on the action. Explanations abound for why men would want to wear jeans that look so uncomfortable and impractical. Some fashion observers say skinny jeans' tight hold on certain men stems in part from the wearer's desire to show off their gym-sculpted bodies. Then, too, denim brands, retailers, and men's fashion magazines have relentlessly promoted skinny jeans. And pop stars like Justin Timberlake and Kanye West, by wearing skinny jeans, have given something resembling permission for style-conscious young men to wear them. But men are discovering, as women have long known, that the style can be unforgiving. One sometimes must diet and wiggle, tug and stretch, to squeeze into a pair of tight jeans. So the makers of men's jeans are trying to be more accommodating. Levi Strauss and Company added room in the seat and thigh in its newest skinny jeans for men. True Religion added what it calls a four-way stretch spandex material to its newest men's skinny jean. Worried that men consider spandex in anything other than gym clothes to be for women only, it isn't advertising that detail. True Religion, whose men's jeans sell for between $172 and $398, says 15% of the top-selling men's jeans in its own retail stores were quote-unquote slim leg jeans in the first quarter of 2009, up from 11% in the year-ago first quarter. But here's my question. Are skinny jean sales rising because they're more popular or because there are less options in the way of more roomier jeans? I think that they actually are forcing us to buy skinny jeans. That's my take on it. What's yours? A Levi's spokeswoman says over the past several months, our men's skinny jean styles have been among our most requested and top selling jeans. Men's premium jeans, a small part of the overall market, have been a bright spot in the current recession. Men's jean sales totaled $5.31 billion in the U.S. for the 12 months ended April 30th, according to market researcher NPD Group, down 2% from a year earlier. But sales of fashion jeans priced $50 and up rose by 8%. NPD doesn't track sales by style. I don't know, y'all. I feel I'm being forced into this against my will. E from Queens bears witness to that. If you feel you're being forced into making purchases that you don't support, weigh in quickly. Got a lot of ground to cover. Rod Ginyar, Cobra City, California. He says, regarding the skinny jeans, you can 1, run much faster when the need arises. 2, keep the hawk off your personals in the winter. 3, be a bit more attractive to more women if that matters to you. And 4, if you have muscular thighs, you can buy a bigger pair yet still show them off for the girls. Understand that fashion, like all things cultural, comes full circle periodically. Now, however, though, Rod has adjusted his view after I gave a full shot of the skinny jeans. Rod says that full shot of those skinny jeans shows that they're just a bit too skinny. Like you said, they can be dangerous, especially for the child-producing male. This is serious, man. Somebody in the fashion world, if you care to enlighten me, please do so. How did this happen? How did it happen so fast? Rod Ginyar makes a good point, though. Things come full circle. Late 80s, skinny jeans were in effect. The great Chuck D, wise, intelligent. 90-91, leaders of the skinny jean movement at that time. Chuck D with the Wranglers, right? But, you know, I just started to wonder when the baggy jean era would ever end. And it looks like it's coming to an end now. And I don't like it because I feel like I don't have options to fight this. If you want to join my movement, DTSJ, Death to Skinny Jeans, this may be our last stand. Tiger Woods has responded to Jim Brown. Let me know what you think. This went down on June, I think, 30th. Tiger Woods responds to the comments from Jim Brown. We talked about this at length in our last show.
And Jim Brown was critical recently, saying, you know, and I want to read this quote to get it accurately. He's a killer. He'll run over you. But as an individual for social change, terrible, terrible. I don't know if you heard that from Jim Brown. And I wonder what your reaction was. Not the first time you've heard that sort of thing, but if you had a reaction and if it's any different than you've heard over the past few years from some people.
Well, I try and help as best I can through my foundation. You know, I think we do a pretty good job of that. Obviously, certainly in Southern California, here, and hopefully in the D.C. area soon. We've made an impact with over 10 million kids have been involved in our foundation and around the country. we've made our impact. The social change that Jim is referring to, you know, I haven't talked to him about it, so I really can't tell you. But what we're doing with our foundation, what we're doing here in the United States, and then obviously I think what we're going to do it here in Thailand shortly, I think we've done a pretty good job.
You ever feel like having like a conversation with him might be a productive thing, given just the status and the stature that you guys have?
I don't know. Depends on, you know, if, you know, both parties shows up open-minded, and that's the whole idea.
Here's what Jim Brown said on HBO Real Sports.
There is also an FBI file on Russell, branding him as, quote, an arrogant Negro.
The only line they didn't block out was that he didn't give autographs to the white kids.
Throughout the decade, wherever race and sport intersected, Brown and Russell would lend their hand.
Up until this time, black athletes have thought in terms of jock straps and gold medals and sneakers and nothing else.
When Dr. Harry Edwards began his Olympic Project for Human Rights and organized top amateur athletes to protest the 1968 Olympics, he reached out in vain to numerous pro ballers.
Two athletes reached out to us. One of them was Jim Brown. The first one was Bill Russell.
How much did their support really matter?
Oh, it mattered a great deal to me.
Why?
There was a substantial Avery Brundage perspective out there, and Mr. Brundage has stated, I don't understand why these Negroes are talking about boycotting anything. The Olympic Games are the only forum in the world where Negroes and communists can stand on the same level as the rest of humanity. So you can imagine what the perspective was.
I said, well, what you're talking about is who can play politics with the Olympics?
The executives can, the athletes can't.
Right.
And so when Bill Russell of the Boston Celtics and Jim Brown of the Cleveland Browns stand up and say, hey, you're right, it meant everything to us.
Where are the heirs to Jim Brown, Bill Russell, Arthur Ashe, Billie Jean King, Jackie Robinson? Why don't we see the same degree of, if not activism, responsibility?
What you have to acknowledge is their starting point. Jackie had taken us from point A to point B. Well, I came along, it was time to go from point B to point C. So I know a lot of these young guys that are really quite wealthy, that have a social conscience, but they see the problem different than we saw.
Is that to say that as we sit here, you are neither surprised nor disappointed at the lack of activism among today's top athletes?
There are one or two individuals in this country that are black that have been put in front of us as an example. But they're basically under a system that says, hey, they're not going to do certain things. Yes, that disappoints me because I know they both know better.
Tiger and Michael.
Yeah, I know they both know better, okay? And I know they both can do better without hurting themselves.
The next morning, following our round of golf, Jim Brown candidly returned to the subject of today's athletes, and particularly Tiger Woods.
You know what's so interesting about Tiger to me? If it was just a matter of me looking at an individual that's a monster competitor, this cat is a mama jama. He's a killer. He'll run over you. He'll kick your ass. But as a individual for social change or any of that kind of shit, terrible. Terrible. Because he can get away with teaching kids to play golf, and that's his contribution. And in the real world, man, I can't teach no kids to play golf, and that's my contribution if I got that kind of power.
So let me ask the question, and I'll move off of this. You can carry it further in your thoughts and with your comments. Did Tiger Woods respond to Jim Brown's criticism? And did he very smoothly open the door for Jim Brown to walk through if he wanted to continue the argument? Tiger.
And Jim Brown was critical recently, saying, you know, and I want to read this quote to get it accurately. He's a killer. He'll run over you. But as an individual for social change, terrible, terrible. I don't know if you heard that from Jim Brown, and I wondered what your reaction was. Not the first time you've heard that sort of thing, but if you had a reaction and if it's any different than you've heard over the past few years from some people.
Well, I try and help as best I can through my foundation. You know, I think we do a pretty good job of that. obviously, certainly in Southern California, here, hopefully in the D.C. area soon. We've made an impact with over 10 million kids that have been involved in our foundation and around the country. We've made our impact. The social change that Jim is referring to, you know, I haven't talked to him about it, so I really can't tell you. But what we're doing with our foundation, what we're doing here in the United States, and then obviously I think what we're going to do it here in Thailand shortly, I think we're doing a pretty good job.
You ever feel like having like a conversation with him might be a productive thing, given just the status and the stature that you guys have?
I don't know. Depends on, you know, if, you know, both parties shows up open-minded, and that's the whole idea.
I think it's a stalemate. Tiger Woods did not back down from his version of social change, which means using golf as a means to give children a broader life experience and to support charitable development. And he opened the door for Jim Brown to define what it is exactly he'd like for Tiger Woods to do. Very shrewd. I thought Tiger's response was very shrewd. He says, I had to talk to Jim about it. And then Michael Wilbon says, well, do you think talking to him would help? And he says, well, I don't know. Tiger is no dummy. No dummy at all. All right. I don't want to necessarily talk directly to whatever happened with Steve McNair, tragically murdered by a woman that they describe as his girlfriend. But let me use that subject to talk about a subject or a topic that many people may not even think of often. Op-ed in Tuesday's Washington Times, July 14th, 2009. A domestic violence victim. Women are the aggressors as often as men. Says here, police recently concluded that former NFL star Steve McNair was fatally shot in his sleep by girlfriend Sahil Kazemi in a murder-suicide. Yet while there are more than 10,000 media entries on Google News for Steve McNair, only a few of them even mention the phrase domestic violence. Violence by women against their male partners is often ignored or not recognized as domestic violence. Law enforcement, the judicial system, the media, and the domestic violence establishment are still stuck in the outdated man as perpetrator and woman as victim. That's the conception of domestic violence. Yet more than 200 studies have found that women initiate at least as much violence against their male partners as vice versa. Men account for about a third of domestic violence injuries and deaths. Research shows women often compensate for their lack of physical strength by employing weapons and the element of surprise, just as Ms. Kazemi is thought to have done. The most recent large-scale study of domestic violence was conducted by Harvard researchers and published in the American Journal of Public Health. The study, which surveyed 11,000 men and women, found that, according to both men's and women's accounts, 50% of the violence in their relationships was reciprocal, involving both parties. In those cases, the women were most likely to have been the first to strike. Moreover, when the violence was one-sided, both women and men said women were the perpetrators about 70% of the time. New research from Deborah Capaldi shows the most dangerous domestic violence scenario for both women and men is that of reciprocal violence, particularly if that violence is initiated by women. Moreover, children who witness their mothers assaulting their fathers are just as likely to assault their intimate partners when they are adults as those who saw their fathers assault their mothers. There are solutions to protect all parties affected by domestic violence. Now, this is op-ed by Ned Holstein and Glenn Sachs, a domestic violence victim. Women are the aggressors as often as men, July 14, 2009, Washington Times. These are the solutions that they offer. One, just as we've properly stigmatized men who hit women, we need to encourage women not to attack their men. Ms. Capaldi says she thinks the best way for women to be safe is not to initiate violence against their male partners. The question of initiation of violence is a crucial one. And much domestic violence is mutual. And initiations, even that seem minor, may lead to escalation, she says. Ms. Capaldi's research found that a young woman's domestic violence was just as predictive of her male partner's future domestic violence as the man's own past domestic violence, too. When safe, the domestic violence system needs to treat violent couples as violent couples instead of shoehorning them into the man as perp, woman as victim model. Counseling services for violent couples are rare. Domestic violence author and authority Lonnie R. Hazelwood says the misguided domestic violence establishment. Damn, I didn't even think of that. There's a domestic violence establishment. He says the misguided domestic violence establishment has been very effective in passing laws to prohibit couples counseling and eliminate programs which use gender-inclusive strategies. Third, establish services and help for male domestic violence victims. Denise Hines of Clark University found that when an abused man called the police were more likely to arrest him than to arrest his abusive female partner. Damn. This is partly the result of primary aggressor laws, which encourage police to discount who initiated and committed the violence, but instead look at other factors that make them likelier to arrest men. When the men in Ms. Hines' study tried calling domestic violence hotlines, 64% were told the hotlines helped only women, and more than half were referred to programs for male domestic violence perpetrators. Finally, work to ensure that male domestic violence victims will not lose their children in custody proceedings. Ms. Hines found that the biggest reason male domestic violence victims hesitate to leave their wives and girlfriends is concern for their children. If they leave, their children are left unprotected in the hands of a violent mother. If they take their children when they're found, the children will be taken away and given to the mother. Moreover, the men probably would lose custody of their children in the divorce custody proceeding anyway, again leaving their children in harm's way. Perhaps none of these policies would have saved Mr. McNair. However, domestic violence by women isn't rare. It isn't trivial, and ignoring it harms couples and their children. Interesting, to say the least. Let me stay on domestic matters. Affairs of the Heart. July 13, 2009. What God has joined together, recession makes harder to put asunder. For some, the downturn keeps divorce on ice. Now, I've been hearing a lot of this. Harry and Freeman, the personal finance guru, told us at blackelectorate.com that one of the things that she's been seeing among couples who are coming to her for financial counseling are people who were thinking of getting divorced are staying together. And of course, the converse is true. People who were in relationships that may not have been serious or at a certain level are deciding to get married. What God has joined together, the recession makes harder to put asunder. What do you think of this? Rhonda Brewster and her husband have decided they don't want to be married to each other anymore. But while they're ready to move on, they still can't move out. They don't want to sell their home in Huntsville, Alabama, in a down market. They can't afford two households until Miss Brewster finds steady work. So for now, they are living under the same roof but on separate floors. The kids are okay with it, says Mrs. Brewster, a 39-year-old freelance writer and stay-at-home mom. They just know that mommy lives upstairs and daddy lives in the basement. Unwinding the ties of matrimony is rarely simple or inexpensive, but for many couples, the sour economy is complicating the process further. Listen up. Divorce lawyers say many couples are delaying the decision to dissolve marriages and are staying in unpleasant situations. Now, any lawyers out there, any police officers in reference to the last story, with taking time to talk about affairs of the heart, domestic matters. Divorce lawyers say many couples are delaying the decision to dissolve marriages and are staying in unpleasant situations for fear of being on their own at a time of economic uncertainty. Others are being forced to live together after the divorce is final for financial convenience. That can strain the emotions and result in awkward negotiations about subjects like dating. You know? In Nashville, Tennessee, Randy and Lori Ward, or Word, jointly filed for divorce in February after 10 years of marriage and expect to get a court date this summer. Meanwhile, they continue to share a house while Miss Word, who had been a stay-at-home mother in recent years, tries to find work in marketing. "I don't see jobs out there," she says. "Things are getting a little cramped in the house." Mr. Word, a 36-year-old construction project manager, keeps his clothes in boxes in the study and sleeps in the living room. "Luckily, we bought a very nice couch 2 years ago," he says. Miss Word, who is 37, works part-time as a waitress while she is searching for full-time work. Some nights she returns home from a shift to find Mr. Word in the bed complaining that his back can't take another night on the couch and asking her to please sleep in the living room, which she does. Hold on. Yeah, that's gangster. Yeah, why does the man have to have the couch automatically? Both say that they are actually getting along better now that they are no longer in an emotional marital relationship. "We're a lot kinder to each other," says Miss Word, adding, "We're not so offended and bothered by each other," Mr. Word says. "We actually developed or redeveloped a friendship that I think had gotten lost a little bit." A May survey by the Institute for Divorce Financial Analysts, a national organization for financial professionals who work on divorce cases, found that the recession was delaying divorces and inspiring creative divorce solutions in living arrangements. People are saying, "I've put up with it for the last 10 years. I can put up with it for another year." According to Gary Nicholson, president of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, in a poll of 1,600 of its members, the group says respondents estimated that divorce cases in the 6 months through March were off 40% from normal levels. In Los Angeles County, divorce filings in the first 4 months of this year dropped 3% to 9,048 from the same period last year and are down 9% from the compatible span in 2007, according to records from the Los Angeles Superior Court. "A lull in divorce could be a silver lining in the recession," says Steve Grissom, president of the Church Initiative, a Wake Forest, North Carolina organization that runs divorce care, a national support group. Mr. Grissom says couples who postpone splits may be able to work through problems and reconcile. Any thoughts? Is this you? Is this someone you know? Again, I want to applaud Mr. Word for telling his wife, "Hey, if we're going to have a couch bedroom arrangement, why do I have to always sit on the couch?" Maybe we'll nominate him for Gangster of the Week. I'm staying on this subject. Article from Reuters today. "In love, it's not enough to keep a marriage," study finds. Living happily ever after needn't only be for fairy tales. Australian researchers have identified what it takes to keep a couple together, and it's a lot more than just being in love. A couple's age, previous relationships, and even whether they smoke or not are factors that influence whether their marriage is going to last, according to a study by researchers from the Australian National University. The study, entitled "What's Love Got to Do with It?", tracked 2,500 couples married or living together from 2001 to 2007 to identify factors associated with those who remained together compared with those who divorced or separated. Yes, this is Home Econ 101. It found that a husband who is 9 or more years older than his wife is twice as likely to get divorced as are husbands who get married before they turn 25. Children also influence the longevity of a marriage or relationship, with 1/5 of couples who have kids before marriage, either from a previous relationship or in the same relationship, having separated, compared to just 9% of couples without children born before marriage. Women who want children much more than their partners are also more likely to get a divorce. A couple's parents also have a role to play in their own relationship, with the study showing that some 16% of men and women whose parents ever separated or divorced experienced marital separation themselves, compared to 10% for those whose parents did not separate. Also, partners who are on their second or third marriage are 90% more likely to separate than spouses who are both in their first marriage. Not surprisingly, money also plays a role, with up to 16% of respondents who indicated they were poor or where their husband, not the wife, was unemployed saying they had separated, compared with only 9% of couples with healthy finances. And couples where one partner and not the other smokes are also more likely to have a relationship that ends in failure. Factors found to not significantly affect separation risk included the number and age of children born to a married couple, the wife's unemployment or employment status, and the number of years the couple had been employed. Staying on topic, San Antonio Spurs forward dumps fiance on eve of wedding. Now that's a flagrant foul. Former New Jersey Nets star Richard Jefferson bailed on his stunning fiance, pulling the plug on his posh Manhattan wedding at the 11th hour without even alerting some of the guests, the New York Post has learned. The cold-footed forward's decision to ditch one-time net dancer Keisha Nicole Nichols. Hold on, there was a Mary Beth. Now, let me tell you all how official I am. I'm not reading the Richard Jefferson story. This is Cedric Muhammad talking. When I was a teenager, I went to a New Jersey Nets. Oh, man, you see how gangster I am. I might nominate myself for Gangster of the Week with this story. I must have been about 14. I went to the New Jersey Meadowlands. No, Lori Beth. I came to the turnstile. One of the New Jersey Nets cheerleaders was absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. She gave me the warmest smile. I never seen a smile like that in my whole life. Let me tell you what your boy did at the age of 14. I was so impressed, or so smitten. I wrote the New Jersey Nets organization a letter. I was 14, no lie. Damn it, I think I'm the gangster of the week. I wrote the New Jersey Nets front office, I don't know who the GM was at the time, a letter applauding, saluting, recognizing and acknowledging exactly how that New Jersey Net cheerleader had gone out of her way to show me warmth and make me feel like, well, you remember we talked about subordination as a business principle? That's what she did. Instead of her being the center of attention, she made me feel center of attention. I wrote the New Jersey Nets. Don't you know she sent me like 8 signed autograph posters? Her name was Lori Beth Campbell, I think. Let me tell you how real I am. You all go Google that. I think that was her name, Lori Beth Campbell. 1980s, New Jersey Nets cheerleader. You don't think that the New Jersey Nets like that? Getting a letter from a Philadelphia 76ers fan? Anyway, back to Richard Jefferson. The cold-footed forward's decision to ditch one-time net dancer Keisha Nicole Nichols was so last minute that some of his oblivious friends had already shown up last Saturday at the Swank Mandarin Oriental in Columbus Circle for the $2 million wedding that never happened. Jefferson, who was traded in June, I mean, I think I have a pick. Let's throw up a shot of Richard Jefferson. I don't know if this is his fiance or not. You all who are up more on these things than I can testify. Oh yeah, I can't put that picture up. We'll get to that later. Pardon me. Let me get back to the story. Anyway, Jefferson, who was traded in June to the San Antonio Spurs, dumped Nichols just before the weekend, according to sources. She immediately called her family and friends to say the ceremony was off. But Jefferson waited much longer, his friends told the Post. He called about 2 hours before the wedding. It was nuts, said one Jefferson pal. He never showed up at the hotel, but all his boys were there, the friend said. He gave his best friend the black Amex or American Express credit card for the night. Jefferson's guests made good use of the credit card to party on their pal's dime. Nichols did check into the hotel on what was to have been her wedding day and was upgraded to a suite on the 45th floor with a king-size bed and a Central Park view, according to a source at the Mandarin. The would-be bride was stunned, but not entirely caught off guard by Jefferson's unsportsmanlike conduct, according to a family friend. She just wants to keep this as quiet as possible and move on. She's doing just fine, a Nichols family insider said. Neither Jefferson nor Nichols responded to requests for comment. Man, is Richard Jefferson the gangster of the week? The watchman has to get on his job. We've just talked about divorce being delayed because of the recession. Richard Jefferson, apparently, according to the New York Post, which you cannot believe, leaving his wife at the altar. But damn it, he gave his boys the Black American Express card. Alex, speak to these people.
Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show, only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
Tell me this is the picture that I put up. Richard Jefferson and his fiance, supposedly. I don't know. Man, what do you all think happened? Divorces being delayed because of the recession. What God has joined together, the recession makes harder to put asunder. Domestic violence victims. This is unbelievable. They're saying half of all domestic violence is committed by the woman.
Cedric Muhammad on the Black Coffee Channel.
Oh, me coming out of dance. Easy. The Jamaicans are being blamed for the skinny jeans movement. This is coming from about three people. I got to read these comments. West Indians being blamed for skinny jeans. Eleazar from Brooklyn, who is Haitian. We must mention first our brother, the Haitian general. Eleazar from Brooklyn says, I blame the Jamaicans for the skinny jeans movement.
Wanna be a lover.
queen is back, Janine from Hartford, Connecticut. She says, said, I first noticed the skinny jeans fad among my West Indian students. They wear the big buckle with the pants hanging down, showing their boxers. With certain men, sizes, and shapes, the jeans look okay. Because I love looking at the shape of a well-built man, but I can't stand to see the brothers' boxers, young or old. Janine from Hartford, the West Indian students embracing the skinny jean fad. Now, there is footage of, Usain Bolt with skinny jeans on. I've seen it. I seen it, I should say. I had to talk to my mother about this. Were Jamaicans wearing skinny jeans when she grew up? Raginyar, Culver City, California, has an interesting comment regarding Tiger Woods responding to Jim Brown's accusation that he's not socially conscious enough. Yeah, that's Richard Jefferson and his fiance, from what everybody's telling me. That's the picture that's up. I'll change it in a minute. Just turn away if you don't want to see that. Raginyar says, Tiger Barack Woods has a future in politics if he chooses. He's a good communicator and he could duck a dead on incoming shot like the best of them. And I love what Jim Brown's doing too, by the way. Yeah, let's call for a Jim Brown Tiger Woods summit on social consciousness and community development. Let me end hour number one on a comment from one of the best that ever did it on this show, Cameron from Paterson, New Jersey. Says, I hope all is good. Said, this skinny jeans trend really caught on when these stylists started dressing these new rappers in them in an attempt to embrace and emulate the rock star lifestyles. As you said, they were around for years, but when that Guitar Hero video game took off and all of the hipsters started wanting to be rockers, that was it. Lil Wayne popularized it and Kanye West wore them too. Now the retailers are limiting consumer choices. I couldn't say that no better. Cameron from Paterson, New Jersey. Tell me your experiences with tight jeans. It's DTSJ Day, Death to Skinny Jeans. It's the hottest show in the diaspora. We'll talk about Barack Obama. Did he make a misstep in not going to East Africa as well as West? I'll let you all know why Victor Ortiz, who just got knocked out, is my second favorite boxer. And I will. Maybe this is my second love letter to Kent King from General Hospital. It's hour number two, the hottest show in the diaspora. We'll be right back. Take that Richard Jefferson picture off with his fiance or some unidentified woman.